the Bucks and Bulls both off last night. The Bucks host Cleveland tonight. The Bulls get another night off. And in college basketball, the UW Badgers take on Syracuse. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Tuesday, November the 29th. Should be mostly sunny today, windy and mild. We're expecting a high later on today of 57, but we'll also see wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 36. And then on Wednesday, partly sunny and seasonal, a high of 47. Right now, wind from the southwest at 12. 45 degrees we're seeing in Kenosha. 40 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm really grateful that I can spend this next hour with Mary Coffey, who is the executive director of the Kenosha County Health Center. This is a not-for-profit organization, charitable foundation, I guess we could almost say, a charitable organization that has been in business for quite a few years. Providing a wide array of affordable, quality medical, dental, behavioral health care to many citizens here in Kenosha. And, of course, what they do is complicated, and, of course, it's also complicated by what they want to provide and the resources that are available to allow them to provide those services to the community. And of course, what they do is also tied up in the whole matter of health insurance, those who are insured, those who are not. And part of their mission is to help people enroll in provisions under the Affordable Health Care Act. And of course, there is a bit of a question mark hanging over that entire sphere of the medical field. And so this is a really interesting moment for this organization and others like it across the country. So this conversation really could not be more timely. So I'm really grateful to Mary Coffey for making time in a busy schedule to join us on the morning show to talk about a wide range of questions related to the Kenosha County Health Center. Mary Coffey, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you here. Could you sketch for us, first of all, your own personal background with the Kenosha County Kenosha Community Health Center? At what point did you become their executive director, and what were you doing before that?
I've been at the health center for 3 years. I relocated here from Illinois from a previous community health center. I was there for 10 years. Also as the chief executive officer, so all told about 13 years of running health centers. I am a nurse, a registered nurse is my background, and so I've been in healthcare for we'll just say about 25 years plus. So it's not new to me, and I think the one thing that I can say from all that time is things constantly change in healthcare. They're constantly changing. So you're right. The timing is good because it's going to change again.
Right.
Soon.
Could we kind of address a real general question about what a community health center is? And how specific is that term? I mean, for instance, where you were in Illinois versus where you are now in Kenosha. If an organization has that label, does that mean something very, very specific that we can assume is the case anywhere where a building has that name on the side of it?
Sure. We're one of approximately 1,200 what's shortened as community health centers, but they're really known as federally qualified health centers, which means that they have received a designation through the federal government in which they have to apply for that designation. What that designation gives them is, well, first of all, we're here to help the uninsured and underinsured residents of communities. And what that designation does is it gives us a little bit of an enhanced payment for the patients to cover those that are uninsured. So, you know, our Medicaid is a little bit higher than in private practice. We get malpractice insurance through the federal government, which means that if there were a lawsuit, the employees become governmental employees under the Federal Tort Claims Act. We receive 340B, it's called. These are all legislative terms, so forgive me. I sound like a bureaucrat because they've made us one. But 340B is for the pharmacy. So if a patient comes to our center, we have an arrangement with, for instance, Walgreens. And Walgreens can see our patients at their site. We don't have a pharmacy, so this is a collaborative arrangement. And they can go and get reduced rates. So if they're uninsured, they can get a significant reduced rate. And then we get a significant reduced rate in which we pay for those prescriptions, those products. And then any money that we may, if you will, we receive money from that program that can go to operations. So it helps promote the center. We also have a program called NHSC, which is the National Health Scholar Program. And what that does, it helps us recruit providers of all, you know, physicians, nurse practitioners, social workers, psychologists, dentists, dental hygienists, et cetera. And when they come to our center, they receive a dollar amount for coming. They receive a normal salary, and that goes to pay back their tuition loans. So it's a tuition loan repayment. Mm. And it's significant. It's not small. So I would say that in the past, Kenosha Community Health Center, Kenosha Community has really benefited from that program because probably 50% of our providers come through that program. And when you consider that Kenosha is in the middle of Chicago and Milwaukee, there's a little bit more competitive nature to get people here to
right,
work.
Because both Milwaukee and Chicago have all kinds of attractive places where someone just coming into the field might very much choose to work. And so this is a means by which you can attract some talented and skilled men and women.
Correct. And so and recruitment's a tough thing because none of us by nature are recruiters. I mean, that's not the field we went into. And there's a skill and you know, an art to getting people to come. But we do pretty darn good is what I want to tell you. So in addition to that, you know, for becoming a federally qualified health center and then applying for certain grants along the way and then also getting some what they call supplemental funding for things such as our quality program or things to help us with IT, we get a dollar amount. So our baseline through federal grants is about $2 million. So now we received all of that. There is a cost to it, obviously. Nothing is free. So for us, that means that every 18 months we go through a survey. So the federal government comes out and they actually evaluate the site. And we just had one in March. So there's 19 program requirements that we must follow, with 160 different elements that we must meet.
Wow.
Yes, so it's intensive. It covers access, it covers management, it covers governance, which is our board, and our financial situation, and quality, of course. So it's a well-rounded, pretty intense and robust review. And I'm happy to say that we did very well. Now, were we perfect? No, but nobody is. And part of the goal is to find ways to help us get better. So I would say out of that, the remaining issue that we have right now, and one that I'm going to publicly speak to, is patient representation on our board of directors. As an FQHC, we're required to have 51% of our board members be patients.
Wow.
Yes, and that is that. This is the only health entity that has that requirement in the nation. And the purpose of that, and it really goes back to Ted Kennedy when he was in office, is that they were talking about creating community health centers. And so they said, well, what's different, right? What's different? Well, they'll have a board. Well, hospitals have boards, blah, blah, blah. Everybody has boards. So what's different? Well, we're going to make it that 51% of the board members are patients. So they can tell the center what their needs are, what they're experiencing, things of that nature. And so that is the hallmark, really, of a community health center, which makes it really different. So a typical board member, and not, I'm really asking people that are listening, if you're interested, to please we'll give you a phone number later, but call and fill out an application, and then you'll go through a process with our board to interview you. But it does require about 20 hours of reading a month. They have a monthly meeting, and then there's a finance committee, a quality committee, personnel committee, and a governance committee, and, of course, the executive committee. So there's also committee work. There's some work that has to be done because, as you can imagine, with 19 program requirements, 160 different elements, the board has a very large part in making sure that we meet those requirements. That's part of their job, along with their fiduciary responsibilities. And in today's world, with all of the electronic records, compliance. You know, compliance has added a lot of work to health centers. So we probably have about, in addition to the federal government and within that, probably in, oh gosh, probably 60 or 70 other different regulations that we have to follow. So we're a highly regulated health center for the size. We're more regulated than a private office is what I'd like to say. So I think that's important for people to know.
And for good reason.
Yes.
But that doesn't make it easier to sort of live under that weight of regulation. So this is a real working board then. I mean, unlike some boards of various organizations and entities where sometimes you're, as much as anything, a figurehead, or you're on that board just to write a check from time to time, not to minimize the importance of that, but this is not that kind of board. This is a board in which people really need to care about the organization and its well-being and have to be willing to work for that well-being.
Correct. And also they have to learn a whole bunch of regulations that they probably didn't ever want to know about in some respects. We value our board. The board is essential to the success of a health center. And I think that through the years we've had some excellent board members. But again, it would be wonderful if we could get some additional patients on the board.
Are you at that 51%
level? We're not right now. So that's why I'm also reaching out, is because it is something that we need to do, we want to do. We have been handing out applications to every patient that walks in the door. It's almost overwhelming to be a patient on the board. And so there's also a board, they have a mentor, is what I'd like to say. They have a mentor on the board who assists them to acclimate them to this process.
One of the things I noticed on your website is where on that initial page you spell out what the Kenosha Community Health Center provides. You end all of that by saying no one is turned away. So in other words, you are here to help the underinsured and even the uninsured, and that no one is turned away. Is that literally true, that no one is turned away, that absolutely anybody can access the services at the Kenosha County Health Center? Or do you need to, Kenosha Community Health Center, I keep saying county, sorry. Is that literally true, or does one need to demonstrate a need for the services that you provide?
The language on the website, no one is turned away for inability to pay.
Ah, okay.
And that is the federal language. And that would be true for inability. The federal government determines the poverty scales, you know, the amount of dollars per household and family members determine where we slide. So, for instance, if you don't have insurance, you know, there's your typical bill. This is what it costs for today's services. But based on your income and your household members, it will slide to a certain dollar amount, with the lowest being $25 for medical, $30 for dental, a little bit more expensive. So let's just say someone comes in and they don't have their $25. What happens? Well, if they don't have it, they can fill out a form in which they'll give us payments. You know, it could be $5 a month, whatever it is. I mean, we do our best to make sure people get in. Now, saying that we don't turn people away doesn't necessarily mean that we can accommodate every individual in this community.
Or all of their needs.
Or maybe all of their needs, which gets to be, you know, kind of a sticky wicket for people. You know, last DHS, Department of Human Service report out of Wisconsin, they roughly said that Kenosha had about 50,000 low-income people. Those are individuals that might access the health center. And so last year, we served a little bit over 21,500 of those patients. which means there's still a lot of people who are low income, and we are the only facility that takes care of the low income. So you work within the capacity you have. So to think that we can do, we do a lot. Oh my goodness, the stuff that we do, the quality of the professionals that we have providing that work, I cannot say enough. I mean, you come to the Community Health Center, you have state-of-the-art equipment, and you have top-notch providers. But there's only so much they can do in a day. And so some people cannot get in the door. And this is not new to Kenosha Community Health Center, and it's not new to health centers across the country. So when we talk about expanding and why we're looking to expand, those are the reasons, some of the reasons why we're doing that.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking to Mary Coffey, who is Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Health Center. Let's talk for a moment about the array of offerings that you have. First of all, when it comes to just basic medical care, I was really kind of amazed by the long list of specific components of what you offer in terms of medical care, beginning with, of course, the most comprehensive thing of all, which is family practice and general practitioners who see someone for just a whole array of general health issues and probably to help safeguard their well-being through life. But spell out some of the other specific offerings under this specific medical field that are offered by the Kenosha Community Health Center.
So we offer lab services. We have a contract with an outside lab. They do bring people into our health center to draw labs at one of our sites. The other sites, we do some of our own lab work ourselves, or draw it and send it out. So there's lab, and that includes cancer screenings. It includes lead screenings. It includes your typical, everyday, any type of lab work that you may need. And we also have an arrangement where it's based on sliding fee scale. So individuals that we make arrangements with, there is a sliding fee scale with them or a reduced rate. And that is a requirement. We have pediatrics. We have an arrangement with Aurora for OB services. We have STD screenings. I mean, you name it, anything under medical, I will just say that pretty much anything except for specialty care you can find just like you can in a private office would be the best, perhaps, analogy. Hmm. We then offer behavioral health services. And so we have psychologists and we have social workers and licensed professional counselors to assist in individuals that have challenges with behavioral health, which is pretty much one out of five patients.
Hmm. Could I just interrupt for a moment? As I was reading about that, it appeared that the main focus of that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, appeared to be assisting people in terms of lifestyle choices that might be really detrimental to other aspects of their own health, and trying to assist people, and it very, very practically based, and which looked like something, a very, very valuable service that probably a lot of us really need for our own well-being. I didn't see a lot that seemed to make special mention of mental illness. Is that also something that you address, or do people need to go elsewhere if we're talking about specific mental illness for which they require treatment of one kind or another?
If we're talking about severe mental illness, we do not have that capability, and we do not have any psychiatrist on board. So our family practitioners or nurse practitioners do a lot of the prescribing. Hmm. So we're going to back up just a little bit in that. Kenosha's role is integration between medical and behavioral health, because we're trying to, if you will, normalize the fact that all of us have challenges in meeting either, let's just say you're diabetic. I mean, okay, I come in, you're diabetic today, right? I was thinking I'm okay. Now I have I have a disease, so I have to monitor my sugars. Well, so I have to poke myself with a needle. I've never done this before. And then I have to maybe take insulin. I have to drop medicine and give that to myself. And I have to change the way that I eat. And I have to manage my stress. And, you know, pretty soon all of that becomes very overwhelming to any of us. And so what we're trying to do is you know, with our chronic illness, you know, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, any of those things, is that we're trying to add a component of behavioral health so we can help people make the lifestyle changes that are necessary to manage their chronic disease. So That's kind of where we're at. We do have some trauma that comes in, trauma-induced care. Children that are, you know, children have a lot of things going on. We have refugees in the community, so now they've been uprooted, their family's uprooted. I mean, there's all sorts of dynamics with that, and they need help with that. We have children that have learning disabilities and things that go with that, that they need assistance with. Depression is huge. So there's just so many things. So that's really our role. In regards to the psychiatrist, pretty much the entire community has tried to recruit psychiatrists, and there is a shortage across the nation.
Right.
I think one report that I saw from Wisconsin was that to meet the need in Kenosha, and this was probably a few years back, the data, we would need between 10 and 17 psychiatrists.
Ugh.
We're nowhere near that. And so one of the things that we've done, although we don't offer it, is that we have a relationship with a telepsychiatry group in town, in which patients that need more services or need a bit closer management of their medication, which we might not be able to do, we refer them there. And we're working towards having a partnership with the County of Kenosha and the Kenosha Human Development Services to and have NAMI as our kind of guidance person that gives us the guidance to expand telepsychiatry, because the one thing about community health centers is that we can't do everything. We recognize we can't. But what we can do is form partnerships, and we do our very best, our level best to do that. And part of that is accepting certain things. For instance, we all would like a psychiatrist, but if we can't get it, then what else can we do? And so then, telepsychiatry, it's a little bit different. But if we can start getting people to try it, then at least we'll probably be able to get further and help more people.
Right. Better than nothing, certainly.
Yes.
A step in the right direction. So in addition to medical and behavioral services, dental is, of course, a big, big issue. Tell us all that is offered in this respect.
Sure. Dental is, we have dentists on board, and they do the exams, and then they do treatments. So they'll, root canals, we do dentures, we do extractions, although every dentist will try to do everything except the extraction if they can, because you want to save teeth. Then we have the hygienist, which is, the next group of providers, and they do the education, the cleaning of teeth. They would educate the big pieces, flossing. We all hear that. We go to the dentist, make sure you're brushing, teach people how to brush. We then go into 21 schools, and we offer a Seal Smile program, which is a program through Children's Alliance. And what we do is we go in and we do a little exam and get sealants on the children's teeth in certain grade levels. And then education. Teach them again. We give them toothbrushes and floss, and we tell them the importance of that. And then through that exam, if we find that they have decay, then we refer them back to the center to be seen by a dentist so they can get their cavities filled and things of that nature. So all health centers do have a component of dental, some larger than most. We have one of the largest programs in dental in Wisconsin. And we do more services. So anything under the additional, such as the root canals and the dentures and those types of things, we're not required to do that. Those are things that there's a need in the community, and so we offer those services because nobody else does. But there's also a limit to what we can do as far as dentists as well. And doing the math on those 50,000 patients, we would need about 22 full-time dentists just to meet the low income. Now, the challenge is that there are other dentists in the community. And we have reached out through the Wisconsin Dental Associates when we lost some dentists, if you could offer some spots, slots. The challenge is that the state doesn't offer a reimbursement rate that's high enough to cover the work that they do. And so somewhere here I have a statistic from the state that in Wisconsin, there were 37% of all licensed dentists were enrolled in the Medicaid program. So that's, if you figure you take your pot of 100% of your dentists, 37 in 2014 actually enrolled in the Medicaid insurance program. Of those, 47% of the 37 were active and saw more than 26 patients. A third served 1 to 25 members, and 20% served none. And so really that's a legislative issue that needs to be corrected. Hmm. Because communities, a community health center, everybody wants to do everything and everybody wants to do it well. But there is a limit. So when you just, for instance, when I came, the situation was is that we're just filling slots, if you will. So anybody that called would get an appointment. So you come in and the dentist sees you and says, okay, I've looked at your teeth and you have four cavities and you need a root canal and, we probably should extract this tooth because no matter what we can do is going to happen. So you now have what's known as a treatment plan. So you probably have five or six more visits to get this work done. Well, if we're just filling slots with the people that just need to get in, then you're never going to get to your treatment. And I think that's, one of the concerns that patients have brought forward. In fact, I know it's a concern patients brought forward. I come in and I'm told I need to get this work done, but I can't get back in.
Well, you get in for that initial visit, but then it would be such a long wait for visit number two and visit number three and so on.
Sure. So you figure if the most dentists that the community health center in Kenosha has had is about 11 dentists, and you need 22, and you're constantly just bringing people in because they need to get in, you're not providing quality care. I mean, you as a patient aren't getting what you need. And so we had to make some tough decisions, and that is, and you have dentists that aren't satisfied because they're perfectionists. And they want to make sure that, okay, I've told this patient they need help. Now I can't get them back in. So I'm not doing my job. So we had to make some adjustments. We had to go to the board, explain the situation, and say we have to change the way that we're scheduling. And so what we did is we went to a 30-day schedule. And this way, people that are they're seeing their patients, then they can make their follow-up appointments. And as they finish treatment, they can open up a new slot. So in order to provide that quality of care, you need to do that. In lieu of that, you have chaos every day because, you have new patients every day coming in the door. You've got a front desk that's trying to schedule people's new patients. And in a community health center, there's all sorts of documents you have to bring to share with us to get enrolled. And then you have dentists that are taking, looking at them and saying, okay, this is your problem, but not being able to fix the problem. And then you have emergency slots, which we're required to have. And people now have just learned, well, I can get an emergency quicker than if I wait. So if I come in and I have pain or some other symptom, I'm going to get in faster. And so you're creating just this vicious circle of not doing the job that you really want to do. And so that has kind of slowed down, the process for new people getting in the door. But I do believe the dentists are more satisfied and the patients are getting their work done. Dentists work in a team. So you have your dentist, your hygienist, and your dental assistants. So the assistants, they manage the tools. I mean, they help manage the patient while you're trying to do your work. And then the dentist does the exam, and then they get moved to the hygienist to do the cleaning and education. So what we ended up in a situation is that we had far more dental hygienists than dentists. So on the dentists were reporting they were overseeing three hygienists. So they had their own schedule of patients, and then, which is about 14 people a day. And then you have a hygienist with about 10 people a day. And, now they now have an additional 30 patients that they have to see. It's unmanageable.
Right.
And it's not the right way to do your work. So we had to make some tough decisions about how, until we could recruit and get our levels back up, how to manage that.
So in other words, in terms of the personnel within the dental area, it was your belief that there needed to be the right balance of different kinds of personnel, and that the scheduling challenges are even worsened if those numbers aren't quite right in terms of number of dentists, number of hygienists, and so on.
Correct. And we sought outside experts. We didn't just do this on our own. I mean, it was evident that this frenzy was occurring and our staff was dissatisfied, the patients were dissatisfied, and we had to make changes. So we brought in the DentaQuest Institute has a group that only works with nonprofit dental programs that serve the uninsured, because they understand all of the demand and all of the challenges, and they understand, if you will, the psyche of the worker that wants to come in and do a good job every day.
Right.
And so they came in and they helped with these things and said, you're right, the demand is great and exceeds what your capacity is, and so you need to make changes. And so they helped us through this process. So now we've entered the era of shortages everywhere, not just psychiatrists, but you have family practitioners. Every health center has at least one family practitioner open, and dentist. There's a shortage of dentists across the nation. And so these things impact us as well.
Sure.
And this shortage is so intense that the National Association of Community Health Centers in Washington came out with a study and studied all health centers to see what these vacancies were like and how long was it taken to fill and what was the impact on the health centers. And they put a report out in March, and that went to all the federal legislators to say, you know what, we need to figure this problem out. So the challenges we're having are challenges that my counterparts are having, and it's intensified in a community where you know, you have this many people that have low incomes.
Can I just ask this kind of frenzy situation that you described, which really does sound like quite a challenge for you and your staff? Is there a particular reason why it has occurred in the dental realm and not so much in the general medical realm? Is it that you don't have the same shortage of doctors that you have a shortage of dentists, or does it operate so differently that the one area is more apt to have these kind of problems arise?
Well, it's an interesting it's an interesting question, and one that I don't know that I have all the answers for, because although I will say that what we were able to do in medical is when we when our medical director and her husband, who was a family practitioner, moved to Florida, we lost two family practice providers. We were able to bring in nurse practitioners who can do similar work. And so we could create a new model of care, right? So now some patients don't like nurse practitioners. They want a doctor. And so, you know, some just got frustrated probably and went elsewhere or not getting care because they don't have it. But we were able to modify that. In dental, there isn't anybody that can do the dentist work except for the dentist. There isn't that another category. In behavioral health, you have psychologists and you have social workers and you have counselors that do similar things, but they build on each other. And so you can also kind of get by there. And then you can get RN case managers who can help with getting patients in and talking about their chronic illness. And then you can get non-clinical case managers that can work on, you know, the day-to-day transportation or getting a mattress for someone that needs a bed, things of that nature that can help in that process. But in dental, you're limited in that regard because it's a very specialized field. You know, dentists are surgeons, you know. So their scope is limited.
Interesting. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Mary Coffey. She is Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Health Center, and we are talking about the array of services that are offered by the Kenosha Community Health Center and talking about some plans already underway for expansion. We should probably touch briefly on two other aspects of what you do. One of them is that you offer school-based health care, and I was impressed by the long list of elementary schools that have this presence within their four walls. Describe what is offered at these various schools through the Kenosha Community Health Center.
A team of dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants take portable equipment into the school. They work with the schools to get permissions from the parents to come, and we don't just treat those, we treat everybody that shows up, in other words. So whether they have insurance or don't, we treat them all the same. And so they get a little exam. Someone looks in their mouth to see what their teeth look like. There's no x-rays, but you can get a pretty good idea of decay, et cetera. They then, and they don't get a cleaning at that visit either, but then we go and put sealants on, and that helps prevent cavities. And then someplace, so it's called the Seal a Smile, meaning sealant program. And then if they have other things they need, we refer them back to the center. So, again, there's 19 schools in the Kenosha, city of Kenosha.
And that's all a specific dental
It's just
program.
Dental
so
program,
it's not,
yes.
not medical. Okay.
And then they also have three schools now west of the I that we go and do the sealants as well.
And then, of course, a big part of what you do is under the heading of outreach and among all kinds of offerings there, we start to get into the whole business of enrolling in Badger Care and enrolling in the Affordable Health Care Act provisions and this and that. I should imagine this is among the most complicated of all the things that you do. Just spell out, first of all, the kind of help that you are able to give people when it comes to these complicated matters.
Sure. The outreach and enrollment is under a different division than the community health centers up in Washington are under. And I just point that out because when the Affordable Care Act came along, they called about FQHCs and said, you must do this. So this was not an option for us to enroll patients. They knew that because of the work we do, we are the safety net, that we would be able to reach out in a safe manner to patients. And so everybody had to go through training. The folks that do it have to be certified every year. We have to purchase special insurance to cover them for their work that they do through the state. And basically, they go out at strategic locations. They put out flyers. We put it on our website. And we invite people to come sign up for insurance. And then they get on the computer screen, and they explain the process and the options and to people that have never done this before. So it could take up to an hour to just get through one patient because of the magnitude of options. And then the deductibles, and then there's the tax breaks. And, well, what does that mean for me? And then how do I get that tax break? And so, we then go to we had a program through United Way in which we then even assisted when it came to be tax time to help them make sure that they went and got their tax deduction. So lots of little details involved, but I think the biggest thing is the education piece is what is this going to do for me? How much is it going to cost? What are my deductibles, which are not low? And then how do I gain access? This year, probably don't have as many people signing up now that we have a president-elect that is talking about changing things. And so people aren't quite sure what that means as none of us really do, but the important thing is we try to get them signed up so that they have coverage of some kind, so they can get some health care.
Right. We've already talked about the fact that you offer what you offer even to people who are uninsured.
Yes.
I would assume that is a smaller number of people than it was, let's say, 5 years ago before there was something like the Affordable Health Care Act, or not. you're looking at me as though maybe the answer to that question isn't yes.
Our percentage of uninsured hasn't changed.
Really?
It's about 18% of the patients that we treat are uninsured. The whole time I've been here, and the ACA started a little bit right after I arrived and through this time, and really, more people did get on insurance. But still you have this whole subset of folks that don't and can't afford it. And so we are the option that they have, and we're happy to do the work, and it's important work because it impacts everything they do, how they feel when they go to school, whether they can get up and go get work. Little things like having your teeth cleaned, it makes you feel great, doesn't it? And, you just feel better about yourself. And so everyone at the center works diligently to provide the services we can. And, for instance, when an emergency dental patient comes in, our dentists just don't say, okay, you need this work done, so take this prescription and take this pain medicine and come back when you can make an appointment. They don't stop there because, it's their pride of the work that they do. And so they go in and they get the work done, what they can, with the most important pieces of that work. And we don't receive reimbursement for that if they continue beyond that point. But it's a matter of the pride and the concern they have for the patients. And so I think of all the things that we can be proud of, it's really the work that is done every day by these amazing professionals that come to work in an area that needs services such as Kenosha. And we should applaud them for all that they're doing.
Right. What kind of difference have some of these changes made when it comes to what we've heard so much about, namely people heading to the emergency room for all kinds of things that are not emergencies at all, but where they hope they will not be turned away and can receive care? Not that you work in an emergency room, but I suspect that you have at least some sense of whether or not that remains the kind of rampant problem it was for years and years and years. And to what extent does your organization exist in part, at least, to divert people from that choice, which is an unsustainable choice for people to make?
Correct. One of the things we did a few years ago is there was a opportunity for some supplemental funding, which they call expanded services. And we recognized in Kenosha that a lot of the patients were going to the emergency room. So it was a few hundred thousand dollars, and through that we hired some nurse practitioners, and we hired a case manager to work with a local hospital. And so every day they call and they say, did someone come in the emergency room that was unassigned, meaning they don't have a doctor? Hmm. And then if they say yes, then we share that information and we get the patient into our health center. So they can establish as a patient, we're a patient-centered medical home. And what that concept means is that we're trying to make, help individuals find a medical provider, which this is called a medical home, in which they can get all their services. And so rather than go in the emergency room, that they establish a relationship with us and find providers they're comfortable with so that they will then come back to us. The challenge for all emergency rooms is we're not open 24/7. We're not open on Sundays, and so, still people will go to the emergency room. But I will say that because I've been in hospitals and been doing this for a while, that you'd be surprised at how many individuals with insurance go to emergency rooms as well. Hmm. Only because for so much it's convenient, and once you go in, you get your million-dollar workup because they don't let you leave until they know what's wrong with you.
Right.
And so, some individuals, and it's not a large amount, but they have found that that's a convenience factor.
Right.
If you go to the doctor and you need five or six tests, you may have to go to five or six different appointments. But some individuals have found that this is a workaround to all of that. And so it's probably a program that needs to be studied for many, many years to come.
Right.
Some health centers have actually relocated within hospitals. Hmm. And so then they call it a diversion. So if they're coming in for, an acute illness such as a sore throat or whatever, they just move them over.
Interesting.
Yes, and so they're just really in the evolution of studying those models to see if they work.
Wow, yeah. That's intriguing. Let's talk for a couple of minutes about two points of expansion that I'm aware of, and maybe there are other ways in which the community health center is expanding. One of them is an expansion in process to have a presence in Silver Lake. Tell us what prompted that decision and where you are sort of in the evolution of that.
Sure. About every 2 years, the county of Kenosha and the hospitals and other nonprofits work through their population of urban health. And there is a study that's done in which they reach out to community members and they ask them, tell us about healthcare. Why do you receive healthcare? And if not, why? So there's a large amount of people that aren't receiving health care because of the distance that they have to get the services. Mm. And so when you are low income and you're paying for food and medications and school books and supplies and all that with families do, and your mortgages, to trek up here 45 minutes to Kenosha to come to the FQHC is an expensive day, right? So 19% of our population is driving from about 45 minutes to get services here in Kenosha. So we had an opportunity to apply for $1 million federal grant for either construction or renovation. We found a facility that would let us renovate, and it was a former medical clinic in the middle of Silver Lake. And so it seemed like a good spot for a lot of people to get to. And so that's what we're working on. Now, it's a little bit controversial that 19% of the patients, are there, and then what happens to the people in Kenosha, the city of Kenosha? Well, if you can imagine that, you're cramped for space, you can spread out a little bit more, and then the providers could see more patients because they have more rooms to turn over to see patients. Mm. And so there's some other benefits to this. And it's an area that we received 19 letters of support from schools and the Sharing Center, from the Aurora that's out there. I mean, just a variety of people that are saying we need services. The schools are even saying they need immunizations. They need immunization care. So there's a Head Start out in Westosia. So there are people that still need services. It's hard to get here. And so our goal is to get people closer to health care so that they can improve their health care.
Right.
And then Aurora has a fund called the Better Together Fund, which they started a couple years ago for FQHCs and other nonprofits. And we received $500,000 for a mobile unit. It's a medical unit on wheels to go to Racine, who lost their community health center a few years ago. The health center closed, so they don't have it. What prompted that is the patients then are, you know, often have no health insurance, so they were trying to come to our center. And we couldn't meet all their needs here. And so this project was that we would, our board approved, is that that we would have funding for the unit, for some staff, and then it was to be a project which the community of Racine then through donations, et cetera, participation would also participate in. So it was more of a community project. It was not to drain resources, from our main sites. In fact, when you take on new projects through the federal government, you cannot use, you can't take things away. And you can't use the money that you received, this $2 million that we received for the city of Kenosha. We can't take, let's say, $500,000 of that and now move it over to a different location.
So this has to be, in a sense, new money and sort of outside money.
Right, and self-supporting. And so, you do get reimbursement for Medicaid and some of the insurance, so that also has to help support it.
So where are we in terms of this mobile unit? Does it yet exist? Is it yet functioning?
It exists, and right now we're in Racine on a few days a week, making sure everything's working properly, of course, and we're doing outreach and enrollment. We're doing the insurance enrollment right now while we recruit for a provider. And then, as I mentioned, it's hard to get a family practitioner, and the concern is that people have been without health care for so long that we need an MD on the unit. Mm. And we've reached out to the hospitals to see if there's anybody that, they could help us with the recruitment, and everybody's struggling to get these fine practitioners.
Yeah,
so
right.
In the meantime, we're going to do some screenings. We're going to do the things we can, work with the nurses at Carthage and maybe to have a diabetic day and do foot screenings and do screenings and just see where they're at and the things that we can do.
And this is literally a mobile unit like the bookmobile? I mean, this is on wheels.
It's on wheels. It has two exam rooms. It has handicap access, and then there's an education area and also an area where you can, get your personal information. We'll have limited lab on it, it's just like walking into a clinic, except it's on wheels. It's beautiful.
Wow. Well, that is really, really intriguing. And, of course, as someone who works in Kenosha but lives in Racine, I'm always happy when something occurs that sort of draws the two communities together. So that's especially exciting from that respect alone, let alone the good that it's bringing into the lives of a lot of people. If people want to have more information about the Kenosha Community Health Center and a lot of what we have spelled out in a hurry in this interview, is the best thing for them to visit your website?
They visit the website, but they can also call 262-764-3608. And that is my personal assistant who will get them where they need to go. If they call the main line, they'll get almost anywhere. But I think to get more information about the center, especially the patients who we'd like for board members to call, that would be the perfect line to call.
Say that number one more time.
262-764-3608.
Very good. Mary Coffey is the executive director of the Kenosha Community Health Center. I so appreciate your time, and thank you to you and all of your staff members for all that you do for the well-being of so many people in our community who have no other place to turn. And we wish you well with all that is ahead, including all of the challenges that you're working so hard to meet. And again, thank you for being here for the morning show.
Thank you.
Incidentally, we originally had scheduled today a conversation to air with Bill Roth, who for many years was the organist at Carthage College. He passed away earlier this fall. We're going to be replaying that interview with Bill Roth on Friday's morning show, where he talks about the experience of helping to design and install the beautiful Fritsch Memorial Pipe Organ at Carthage College. Friday's morning show will also include a conversation with Dr. Peter Dene, who is coordinator of the Carthage Christmas Festival. Again, that interview was originally scheduled to air today. It will now air on Friday. On Thursday, we will be talking with James Kinchin from UW Parkside about their choral concert this weekend, and with Jennifer Sassaman about their production of A Christmas Carol, which is going to be opening this weekend.